This is the beginning of class 3.
Sasi Bhagi Jushin Metal Shang Vira Vinshin Yandekyampati Sange Shindu Mitteruvahi Jogunanda Shimba
you is what you lose. That's main mind. Main mind just means consciousness. Just your raw awareness of it, it's a miracle if you think about it. You know, the fact that you are aware. Where does that come from? How does that happen? You know, it's like some kind of miracle. It's more miraculous than a plant or anything. How is it that you know anything? How is it that you're aware? And that's called main mind. And then mental functions are focused at particular things. Jealousy is focused at someone else's achievements. You know, anger is focused at someone else's face or the way they speak to you. Or, so each of those mental events is a mental function. And the main mind is a mental event, but it's not a particular function, it's just there, it's just aware. So, sometimes there's a thing where some kinds of mental functions depend on main mind to shift, and then they go with it. And they're not acting on their own accord. But going for refuge does. Going for refuge has a specific object, and it will go to that object without the... it doesn't ride on the coattails of a raw awareness. It doesn't ride on the coattails of another mental function. It's independent. It doesn't depend on another mental function to move somewhere before it, so it can go with it.
So wouldn't that be spontaneous?
That's what horizon? By its own accord, or however I translate it, that's what that means, and it's a little bit technical. And you'll study it later when you study the mental functions in the second chapter of the Abhidhamma Kosha.
So the clause that arises of its own power means it spontaneously?
Meaning it doesn't have to ride on the coattails of another mental function. There are some mental functions that can't do their job unless another mental function goes before and drags them afterwards. And this is not like that. This is a discrete event of the mind, and it goes to its object and by its own accord, by independently. It doesn't have to wait for feeling, for example, to go towards that object. It's not, for example, dependent on you having a good feeling about the object before you can have that. It's independent. So that's the general meaning of that. But it's a little technical. So I didn't go into it, but it's in the definition and I couldn't leave it out.
Well, obviously you have a very deep, ingrained trust in the object.
Yeah.
If you go there without
having
to
think
about
also,
it.
And you have fear also. Right. So it doesn't mean like a spontaneous thing that comes up in your mind. It just refers to, does it require that main awareness, for example, looks at the object first, and then later that the refuge can look at the object or something.
It's like very automatic when fear occurs.
It's independent of the other mental functions, basically.
But it's based on training?
It's based on a lot of things, mostly fear and trust.
Right? So there wouldn't be dependent on fear moving first in the mind?
Technically, yes, but it's not tuned in with fear. And that's a little tricky.
I mean, is it possible to take refuge without having fear?
No.
I don't think so. It would be dependent on fear.
Right, but it's not dependent on the main mind. It's not dependent on awareness moving to the object before the mental function moves to the object. It's a tricky thing, and I'd rather leave that specific thing for when we study. It's not dependent on awareness moving to the object before the mental function moves to the object. It's a tricky thing, and I'd rather leave that specific thing for when we study mind and mental functions, which we will.
But it sounds like it's outside of these two things that mind is divided into.
No, it is a mental function.
It's a mental function.
Yeah. Because Semba, the movement of the mind, is a mental function. It's one of the mental functions that always goes with mind. It's mind dependent. It's one that you never lose for all your life, even when you die. Semba never stops.
What is Semba?
Semba is any movement of the mind. The mind always moves. The mind never stops.
There's even when Mike Tyson punches you out.
Yeah, no, you reach a lower level of consciousness, but you're really not unconscious. Feeling is another one. You always have feeling going on. Feeling is always present when the mind is present. You don't. Feeling is another one. You always have feeling going on. Feeling is always present when the mind is present. You don't. You may have a neutral feeling, but you're feeling a feeling all the time. And there are other mental functions like that.
I promise this will be very, very brief.
Okay.
The three pages that we just got of the text, are they numbered 1 through 3 because it's another section or another book?
It's another section, and I thought about numbering them all the way through, but I'd rather you keep it behind the one you've got already. And then next week you're going to get a different one, and there'll be 5 sections like that. Because I don't want to renumber them and start over again. I mean, I don't want to number them all the way through, and they're not. They're kind of parts chopped out of the book.
So if we're get them out of order, we'll contact you.
You'll be in trouble. Yeah. All right. Please repeat. Samgye.
Samgye. Pani. Shenjundu. Shenjundu.
Yanba.
Yanba.
Dope.
Shenjundu.
This is the...
Yes, we are. Thank you.
That's it. That's the whole presentation of Bodhicitta in the Abhisamanga. Okay. Actually, there's about 4 more lines. And that's it. So obviously we need a little
collaboration.
By the time you get to the Kitab Temadagi in the 16th century, you have, it's become about 60, 70 pages. Of which you have 3. In your head. You can treat this as the short definition of bodhicitta. You're going to learn a much longer one tonight. Semke, semke, okay, means bodhicitta. I call it the wish for enlightenment. It goes along, probably goes along with that. Ni means is. Shendendu means for the sake of others. Shendendu. I'm sorry, I misspelled. Tigipani Shendendu. I misspelled the word. And du means the wish.
Is Yang Dak total?
Yang Dak Zopa is a word that means totally total.
Yang
Dak? Samyak Sambuddha in Sanskrit. Yeah.
I have a question here. It might sound funny at first, but total enlightenment is referring to Buddhahood, right?
We're going to talk about it tonight. if you, I well, ask your question then I'll
okay, well, my question is, you don't have to answer it now, but here's my question. I'm assuming that total enlightenment refers to Buddhahood, and I'm assuming that by its very nature, the word Buddhahood also means for the sake of others. So if that's true, this would sort of be a bit of a redundancy here, right?
I understand that. I understand your question, and it's what I thought it was, and it's a good question, and we're actually going to talk about it later.
Okay.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, it means, it's a translation of a Sanskrit prefix, sam, which means samyak, meaning totally complete.
I guess ending with the question is it possible to achieve total enlightenment without it
we'll
being for the benefit of others?
We'll get to that. No. Okay. So, bodhicitta, senke, is defined as the wish for enlightenment for the sake of others. The wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of others. Total enlightenment. Sorry. Bodhicitta is the wish to achieve total enlightenment for the sake of others. Someone ever asks you the definition of bodhicitta, you can give that. That's the cheap one. That's what you give in the monastery when you don't remember the other one, which is Shenden Du Yanda Dabi Chaju La Mixion Nagi Do Do Chan Dun Dizi Nenbe Te Chen Ju Gu Lisun Ne Pai Te Chen So In Nam Le Kye Ver Chen Han Gi Gi Chen.
Okay. Is lower nirvana referred to as enlightenment?
We'll talk about it. Okay. And I know you want to learn that longer definition.
So, we're not knowing it. Can you wait
just
a minute, or
can
you write
another? I can wait. In fact, I won't even write the next one. You can use your text. We're going to work from the page 2. I don't encourage you to write on it. I encourage you not to write on it. I encourage you to write on the back of the page next to it. I write little number one, and then I write my note to number one on it, like a footnote. This is a very beautiful line to memorize. I'm going to ask the Tibetan tract students to memorize it. You should know the short definition. Basically, there are two elements going on. You want total Buddhahood, and you want to help other people. And that's basically it. It's like refuge. Refuge had two elements. What were they?
Fear and belief.
Fear and belief, yeah. So now with bodhicitta, we have two elements. It's wanting to reach Buddhahood and wanting to help others. We call it dhumma ni dhinga sem. It means the mind that has two wishes. The mind that is that has two wishes.
Would you say help all or others?
Oh. He says others, meaning all other beings. Mm-hmm. And yourself, really.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah, this is a short definition.
I'm saying others and saying all.
Yeah, all others you can say. All right. So go to page 2 in that text. We're going to talk about the second half, the English. It says the definition of the greater way's wish for enlightenment is as follows. Greater way means Mahayana. Right? Mahayana. Why do you have to call a bodhicitta Mahayana? Isn't all bodhicitta Mahayana? I mean, we're going to start. This is what we do in the monastery for day after day. I mean, why do you call Mahayana bodhicitta? Isn't that a what do you call it?
Redundant.
Isn't all bodhicitta Mahayana? In fact, isn't it when you get bodhicitta that you reach Mahayana? Right? You guys know that. Gaining genuine bodhicitta is what it means to become Mahayana. And until you have true bodhicitta, you have not reached the Mahayana path yet. You can call yourself a Mahayana Buddhist, but you're not. you're not a Mahayana person. All right? Until you have genuine bodhicitta. So why do they say Mahayana bodhicitta? I found it in a sutra many years ago. Senge, which is the Tibetan word for one of the two Tibetan words for bodhicitta. There are three. Senge means to get the mind, to generate the mind, to develop the mind. And it's the mind that wants to get Buddhahood, but there's three Buddhahoods. Mm-hmm. And this is very important in your school. What hat are you wearing this course? What school are you in this course? Do you know?
Majumika.
You're in Majumika.
No, Majumika.
Svatantrika. Yeah. We're in the lower Majumika school. You spend 12 years in that, and you get to have 4 years in the Brahminika.
Right? We're in the higher school, temporarily acting like we're in the lower school.
You're always that.
Yeah, okay.
I said, what hat are you wearing? I didn't say what you are. We say, what hat are you wearing? You know, you go in the monastery and say, the guy says, give me the definition of bodhicitta. He said, well, what hat you want me to put on? What do you want?
So we're prasenchik as wearing satantric hats.
Which all the great scholars were.
Samke, to develop the mind, and the end of the sentence, please.
Well, Senke means to develop the mind. And it means the mind that wants to get Buddhahood, and there's three kinds of Buddhahood. The lower Madhyamika school, which is called Svatantrika.
How do you spell Madhyamika?
By the way, the word Madhyam came into English as what?
Medium?
Yeah. Okay. The root of the English word medium. Madhyam. This doesn't have anything to do with Tantra. It's the same root. It has nothing to do with Tantra. Okay. It's a school. It's the lower Majjhimika school. They say there are three tracks. We only have two, right?
Majjhimika says there are three tracks.
Yeah, Svatantrika says there are three distinct tracks. And that each track has at its end a final goal for that track. And those three goals, you can think of it, I once drew a, we did a book about it once. It's like this. There are three tracks going on. The lowest track is called listeners, or shravakas, that you may have read about it in books. They go through, you don't need to, I'm not going to test you on this, I just want you to hear their belief because it's important. They believe there's five paths, the way that the others go through. Sobjo, Tsong, Lom, Milo, and then you reach Arhat.
What's the English for those five passages?
I don't want to do the whole thing. This you study in the 13th year. I'm sorry, it's not the 11th year. But it's accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and then no one. They're called listeners because they can hear Mahayana Dharma. They can repeat it to others, but they can't practice it.
They don't get it.
They can even repeat what the Buddha said about Mahayana, but they can't do it.
Presumably because they don't get it, or they don't see the value in it, or they do, but yeah, they just something mental.
No, they can't. They're concerned to reach their own nirvana. Yeah, basically not enough intelligence. Yeah, basically that's their. They're a couple of eons beyond us, but
it's more intelligence than the hearts, then. So.
No,
because they've achieved wisdom, which some of the bodhisattvas haven't achieved.
So they can hear. They can.
Well, we call them disciples who are dull, wicked.
Actually, you know, on this very point, in Thailand in February, I talked with a Western Hinayana monk on this subject, and I said, well, what, don't you believe that, how do Buddhists come into existence if you can't practice for it? And he says, oh, no, that's possible, but it's so far beyond that forget about even trying to do it.
Second track is self-made Buddhists. They're one step up.
These are the solitary realizers?
Yeah, what they call it, but it's a bad translation. They're self-made Buddhists.
Now, are the only people that call themselves self-made Buddhas the Majjhimika?
I'll explain it. Solitary realizers is a bad translation.
It's in the book.
And then there's Mahayana.
The self-made Buddhas have 75 paths?
Yeah. In their own track. And in Mahayana, you go through your own five paths, and you reach Buddha.
Same path, not different.
They're called the same thing, but they have different realizations. And it's a long story.
Yeah.
This is a whole subject.
Really cool.
Okay. It's believed by this school that each of these three tracks perceives a different kind of emptiness. They don't call it emptiness. They call it lack of self, selflessness. So these three people all perceive a different kind of selflessness.
So say.
Different kind of selflessness.
They say.
Yeah.
They say there's three degrees of selflessness. The highest one is emptiness. I don't know. I don't want to confuse you. The reason I brought it up is that these three states are called the three enlightenments.
By
the sutta.
Right.
And in sutra, and I can show you the sutras.
And so what is the difference between each of those three?
So this is the answer to Mr. Kiley's question. Why we have to say total enlightenment. Total enlightenment means this one. Buddhahood. No?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the question was total enlightenment, also known as Buddhahood. Okay.
Oh, but I'll talk about that too. Now, are self-made Buddhas Buddhas? No. They're called Sangha. They're called Buddha. Even in Sanskrit, they're called Buddha. But they're not real Buddha. Are they self-made? What do you think? Can they in this life, without a teacher, become a
Without a teacher?
Nirvana.
Sure, of course they can.
No.
They do.
Yeah,
they
sure.
Do.
They do, because they've had trillions of teachers in their And people are uncomfortable with the word self-made Buddhist, so they make up a word like solitary realizer, and that's not the point. The word is self-made Buddha, but then you have to have a teacher to say, self-made means didn't have a teacher in this life, had trillions of teachers before.
Yeah, the
Buddha means not a real Buddha, just reached Nirvana. But the Sanskrit word and the Tibetan word is self-made Buddha.
So a better term would be those who achieved enlightenment, those who, when finally achieving enlightenment, didn't have the presence of their teacher.
In that last life.
Yeah, at that time.
Nirvana, please.
Right.
Or their
enlightenment. Right.
Their track to enlightenment. Okay. So these are called the three enlightenments. And it's found in sutra. I've seen it in sutra. I found it in a sutra. I don't think many people realize that. But that, for example, there was a great saint named Katayana. He gave a Buddha discourse. He gave a talk about Buddhism. The listeners, the people in the audience, reached the three senses. These people who had this kind of ability wanted to get this nirvana. People on this track wanted to get this nirvana. People on this track wanted to get Buddha. Those are the three samkhyas. Those are the three bodhicittas. There are three bodhicittas. That's why you have to say, the greater ways wish for enlightenment in the text here. That's why you have to say Mahayana wish bodhicitta.
So what exactly is the listener's nirvana and the self-made Buddha's nirvana?
Elimination of their bad thoughts.
And what's the difference between the two?
Between these two?
Yeah.
How they got there?
How they got there? Yeah, I'd say that.
The quality?
I don't think there's a qualitative difference between those two.
If they come at emptiness differently, if they receive emptiness differently, it is different.
Of course, according to the Svatantrikas, there must be a difference.
Well, the cause of their cessation, the cause of their losing their bad thoughts, was perceiving a different kind of selflessness. But I don't want to get into that. This is a whole subject. There are books written about this book. One of the can you go from here to here? Can you, do you have to start back to here, or can you skip to here if you already kind of, you know? And we're not going to get into it.
At the beginning you said the old tree can reach what?
Nirvana.
What's the difference between Buddhahood and Nirvana then?
It's a great question. You tell me, you study that.
Well, Nirvana is a cessation of suffering for yourself. Buddhahood is a cessation of suffering for yourself. And
then
going out to
omniscience.
Help everyone
else.
Nirvana achieved under the influence of bodhicitta. Nirvana achieved under the influence of a love for all other beings is Buddhahood. Yeah. It's nice. It's beautiful. If these two guys had bodhicitta in their mind when they got to this point, they would have reached Buddhahood.
So really the difference is almost the activity level. You both have the same nirvanic condition.
Yeah.
And you, the difference is
you both lose your bad thoughts.
Well, where does the omniscience come into play here then?
And you lose your knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
If you have bodhicitta in your mind.
So the bodhicitta.
Then you just said there are three kinds of bodhicitta.
I'm sorry. Mahayana bodhicitta. Good correction. Okay. And that's why the book here says, I'm going to tear apart. This is what we do in a debate. And if otherwise you think this is just all, why is so many words? You know, why don't they just use this little definition that it was okay for my trainer, it's okay for me. But you have to expand on it, or you can't get it precise. So you do have to say Mahayana Senke, Techin Senke. Okay, so now I'm not going to now when you're debating, you say, okay, listen, you know I'm talking about Mahayana Bodhisattva. I'm not talking about Mahayana Bodhisattva. I'm not going to repeat the word Mahayana tonight, okay? Agreed? you get it straight when you're debating in the monastery. Okay.
Can you explain the difference between the three?
Yeah.
The three result between. Three persons.
This person knows everything. These two don't. This person got rid of all his suffering. They did also. So from negative side, all three of them, they stopped all their suffering. But from positive side, now this person knows everything. He sees everything in the universe in one moment. Everything in the past, everything that's going to be, everything that is, and he sees it now. In one moment, he can see it all. So that's the difference between them, basically.
And also that the lower two don't have the desire, as you would say, to apply themselves to achieving the same in others.
Well, it's a very beautiful subject to debate, and there's very beautiful books about it. They always have to come back to here. They always have to come to here. They always will come to here. How they are woken up out of their cessation, out of their meditative state, is very beautiful. You know, the process by which they get the urge to help other people is very beautiful. It's a very interesting subject. We're not doing that tonight. Okay, definition. Don't forget, we're talking about Mahayana Bodhicitta now. Which is the Bodhicitta, which is the only Bodhicitta you ever heard of anyway, until tonight. Okay? It is that main mental awareness belonging to the Great Aware. We're going to tear apart each word.
Can you define what the non-Mahayana Bodhicitta is first?
The desire to reach these two levels. The wish for enlightenment.
For yourself. So how's that Bodhicitta?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I'm trying to say there's three Bodhicittas, and two of them, they don't worry about other people.
So
because bodhicitta is the wish for enlightenment. They have the wish for enlightenment.
Well,
no,
with the
that's not what the bodhicitta was before.
That was Techin Senke. That was assuming Mahayana bodhicitta. When you talk about the Lanto Sumkin, Nan Sumkin, Chirpe, Chan Sem, Sang Chitan Chan Sem, Chipa Mayi Mecha, you say, come on. Bodhicitta in the three paths, in the three principal paths, and bodhicitta is different things. You know, when you're talking three principal paths, you're talking Mahayana bodhicitta. And everybody knows that. You're not talking general bodhicitta.
I never knew there was general bodhicitta.
Yeah, no, people don't know who haven't.
Well, that's partly because bodhicitta is one word.
There's three semkes. I'm going to use the word semke. There's three semkes, which is translated as bodhicitta. And semke means the wish for enlightenment. So there's three wishes for enlightenment. two of them are not real enlightenment, are not total enlightenment. They're just called enlightenment.
But when at the beginning of teachings, when they say, you know, before you hear this teaching, you should develop correct motivation.
That's always Mahayana bodhicitta, and they should have said that. But they don't. A lot of people don't understand the difference. And I wouldn't use the word bodhicitta very easily. I would call it samkhya. Bodhicitta is chanksam. Don't worry about it. Just be aware there's three wishes for enlightenment. Two of them are not the wish for total enlightenment. And that's why we have to say greater ways wish for enlightenment. Mahayana wish for enlightenment. Okay, we got to go on and we'll never finish this definition. First it is main mental awareness. Is main mental awareness. Alright, we're on page 2 of the English. But its awareness is very easy, okay? We can all agree on that, or not?
I haven't quite got there yet. Excuse me.
It is awareness. It's consciousness. It's not a mental function. So, is everybody comfortable with that? Body, mind.
It's the same as
when you wake up out of a deep sleep and suddenly you're aware. Are you comfortable with that?
It's like the human being awareness that we have when we wake up and we see our room.
Yeah. Raw consciousness, without any details. The fact that you're aware.
And what was that defining?
This is now, we're into the what is bodhicitta. What are the qualities of bodhicitta? The first quality that I'm mentioning is awareness. I'm talking about the word awareness.
When you're talking about a specific kind of raw awareness as opposed to a general raw awareness that everybody has?
What I'm saying is that if someone knocked you out and then they put smelling salts in your nose and suddenly the whole world came back to you, this whole light, this whole awareness, the general fact that you know, it's difficult for you to recognize that. The fact that you're conscious as opposed to dead.
I understand that part.
Listen, wait, let me finish. That consciousness, that raw consciousness, bodhicitta is that kind of consciousness, and not the kind of thing where you, oh, I love him. Not that specific state of mind where you say, I love this person.
So not a mental function.
It's not a mental function, it is the mind itself. You don't have a problem with that? You're not going to debate me on that?
Is it the nature of the mind?
No. It is the fact that you
have
in mind.
It all.
It's your main mind. As opposed to this, I'm jealous of him, I'm angry at him.
No.
I wonder what the light is made of.
But I think
it's just the fact that you're aware.
You're talking about two different things. That awareness that you're talking about that comes with the smelling salt is common to all beings.
I'm saying that.
So how do you distinguish that between me and that between somebody of a greater way?
We got two more paragraphs to go. What I'm saying is, do you feel comfortable with me explaining bodhicitta as your main mind? Not a mental function.
Yeah.
Not love.
Natural,
or not a wish.
It's the natural.
Or not a desire. And not an aspiration. It's just the fact that you're aware.
Obviously, your awareness is being transformed once you've achieved it.
No, you're still aware of other stuff,
too. So you're saying once you're aware, you have the wish for enlightenment.
That's better. Now I should get a debate like this. We're going to give it other adjectives. We're going to call it more stuff. But what I'm saying is the basic state of mind is not like a wish, it's not like a love, it's not like a desire, it's not like an aspiration. It's just raw consciousness. You feel comfortable with that? You're not going to debate me with that?
No, I don't.
Well, it sounds like we
I have a lot of trouble with that. Adisha had trouble with it. And Adisha didn't accept it.
No, I think I don't have trouble with what I think you're getting at. I have trouble with, I think, the way you're presenting it.
But it's a difficult point.
If you're trying to make a comparison between the raw basic consciousness that any being has when it's not knocked out by Mike Tyson, if that's what you're talking about, that seems to me to be common to all beings, Buddhas or cockroaches. Okay?
Accept it. But what I'm saying
now, that's the basis.
Listen,
then on top of that.
No, on top of that, we're going to add many characteristics.
Yeah.
But you don't feel uncomfortable with thinking that it's a specific a love or a specific kind of feeling or it's a specific kind
no,
of...
No, I don't feel... No,
it's
no.
It's just that...
If something has permeated something, then that's the way it's going to be. If something is, you know, completely imbued, is that the word I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Then that's the way it is.
Well, you can be imbued with other attitudes that are
Well, yeah, but if you're not imbued with the attitude of the greater way, you've got function.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's a big fight about it.
It's natural. It's not supposed to be a mental function. It's supposed to be something where it's like it exists. There, it's not a mental function. It's its own. It's
like
natural because of the fear and it's
well,
the nature of.
Well,
let me put it
like
this: when I wake up in the morning, I see my room, and then without any effort, I am aware. But I'm aware of myself as a human being on planet Earth, etc. Now, if you're trying to say that for the people who really have this bodhicitta, the same thing happens to them. When they wake up, they have bodhicitta and that everything is like that when they look at it, then that's no problem.
That's what it is.
Okay, but if what you're trying to say is that basic awareness itself...
Unqualified is bodhicitta. No, I would never say that. That's not what I'm saying at all. I mean, that's simple.
Because for the human being, they're a human. That basic awareness manifests itself being a human.
No, that's
the bodhicitta.
No, I'm not saying that. There's many more words there. Every word here has a special function. We're saying it's main mind. According to Rangluk, according to our own system. And it was a bitter fight. I mean... The Buddha's belief is that it's a main mind. The reason it's raw consciousness is not anything that you've said. I understand what you're saying. You're saying that bodhicitta is such a high state that it should imbue my mind the way that my consciousness currently imbues my mind. It's not the reason given in the books. Okay, the reason given in the books is you have two... One of the reasons given in the book is that you have two desires at that moment. What are they?
What moment?
When you get bodhicitta, true bodhicitta, you have two desires. You have two aspirations.
To achieve enlightenment.
You want to help others.
And to do.
And you want to become Buddha.
Yeah.
Okay. If, and the explanation I've heard that I like the best is that according to Buddhism, you can't focus on two objects at the same time. A normal person, a Buddha can. When you're looking at my nose's color, you can't focus on my ear's color specifically. Impossible. When you're having anger, you can't have at the same moment another state of mind. They can come so fast that you think they're one. And in Buddhism, they say that's like lining up rose petals on a target and shooting an arrow at it. And as it passes through each petal, it looks like it's swat. You know, it looks like it went all at once. But actually, if you think about it, there are milliseconds of your mind. It appears that you can have anger and love and something else within a short period of time. But the Buddhism says, no, that's an illusion. It's happening so fast that it seems to be one thing, but it's not. It's really separate states of mind coming up. So it's impossible to have those two mental functions at the same time. You have to speak in terms of the mind which contains those two mental functions. You have to speak in terms of the main mind which is coming along with those two mental functions. You think of the main mind as this big guy who has two arms. Okay, there has to be main mind to have these two arms. You can't have these two arms floating around on their own. There has to be a mind that possesses these two wishes. Because otherwise you just have two wishes floating out there on their own. So there has to be a main mind. And that's the position. That's why you have to deposit it at the main mind.
Is main mind in tandem with the two wishes?
Yeah. And in tandem is a beautiful for what I want to mention next, okay? It's the idea of matching. Matching. It's main mind matched with those two desires. What do we mean matched? We'll study it in the Abhidhamma question, but matched basically means in five ways they are... What did you use? In tandem. They are working in tandem in five ways. And that's true. For you to have jealousy, you have to be aware, right? I mean, awareness is the mother mind, and then jealousy is one of the little things going on in the mind. You say, I have jealousy in my thoughts. So the in the thoughts means in the mind, in the main mind. So you have to have a main mind to hold the two desires. Otherwise, bodhicitta would be two desires. You have to speak in terms of a main mind that has the two desires. How does it happen?
Would they be two different mental functions?
Yeah, bodhicitta would be always plural. So, the ways in which the mind and the mental function. Did I lose you guys?
So there's the kind of main mind that there are. What? How many different kinds of main minds are there?
Only one.
Only one.
Oh, I'm sorry, six.
Six for the six.
But I don't want to get into it, no.
Can you tell us what we should be writing? Because
Okay, I want to be, at the end of this class, what I'd like you to know, and what your homework is, if I ask you, why is it greater's way? Why do we have to say Mahayana Bodhisattva? Why?
Okay.
Why? Why do I have to say, I'm going to talk tonight about Mahayana Bodhisattva?
Because
why?
Because some people...
There's two other kinds of
Buddhas. Because according to some other people, there are two other kinds of Buddhahood.
Right.
And the mind that aspires to those Buddhahoods or enlightenments is also by them referred to as bodhicitta.
Right.
So we don't want to
confuse
right. What we consider the actual bodhicitta with their somewhat lesser
okay, version. That's all right. That's
but that's not a positive connotation of what kind of bodhicitta is.
No, it's not. It's correct.
But it's not.
It's why we put the word Mahayana in there. We'll get to yours later. It's coming. Okay, Lynn. Now my second question is to you. Why does bodhicitta have to be the main, your raw awareness? Why don't we just call it the desire for Buddhahood, the wish for Buddhahood? Why does it have to be your consciousness?
Oh, Mahayana bodhicitta.
Yeah. I said I'm not going to repeat it.
I don't
even
understand the question.
Okay.
I'm lost.
Let's say you feel love for someone, right?
Okay.
There are two states of mind going on. There are two mental events going on. One is that you're conscious.
Mm-hmm.
If I knocked you out and said, do you still love the guy?
Right.
You can't feel love
mm-hmm.
if your main mind is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
If your main mind is running, then you can have an emotion inside of the main mind. Okay.
Okay.
So my next question is, do you think that the desire to help, to achieve Buddhahood for all others, is that main mind, or is it a feeling in the main mind?
The feeling in the main mind.
It's actually two feelings. It's the feeling that I want to become a Buddha, and it's the feeling that I want to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for that reason that we have to call it the main mind. Because something has to hold those two thoughts at the same time.
You can't have them at the same time.
You can't.
Not technically. Okay? Think of it as the place to put the two thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be aware before you can love with your mm-hmm. mind. If I knock you out, forget having love.
Right, there's
nothing. Yeah.
Oh, love is
yeah. So bodhicitta is the main mind.
So there's a whole bunch of other thoughts, too. You're just singling out two of them.
There's feeling going on. Awareness.
But
are you okay?
Function.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Sure?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, and when they say...
I can't even formulate
didn't that. You ever wonder when they said bodhi mind? Buddha mind. You say... I've only got, in English too, you say, I've only got one mind. What are you talking about? You know, they say the mind that wants enlightenment. You say, enlightenment mind. You know, I got one mind. It's a bad translation. You know, Tibetans are always saying mind when you would say thought. Because how many minds do you have?
One mind.
One mind. I mean, in English, mind means the one
mind.
The main mind.
Yeah.
So what maybe Lynn, you could call it the difference this. I'm asking you this. Is bodhicitta your mind, or is bodhicitta some thoughts in your mind? That's a good way to put it.
Very much easier.
Let's stick to that. Okay. This is a real important point.
It's both some thoughts in your mind. It's both. It's your mind, and it's the thoughts that your mind has.
Not a bad answer. Okay. But most people would say it's the thoughts. Right?
So the second, the thoughts within your mind.
Yeah, and what Buddhism says, what the Buddhist meditators say, don't think that way. It is your mind.
It's not the thought.
That has the two thoughts.
I don't understand why.
The mind.
With the two thoughts.
It has
both the mind and the two thoughts in the mind.
No, it's the mind that has the two thoughts.
It's the mind that has the power to even have a thought. It's closer to mind than it is to a mental function.
Do you mean the mind that is capable of having those two thoughts? Is that the easier way to put it?
No. I'll ask you again. Is bodhicitta, which is consists of two thoughts, right? I want to help people, and I want to become a Buddha so I can help people.
Right.
Is it a thought, or is it the mind that has those thoughts?
It's the thought.
It's the thought. It really is the thought. And Atisha held that view. And others, and Maitreya did not. Maitreya says, it's your mind. Now, why?
It's your mind with or without those thoughts?
No, good point. It's your mind that when it has those two thoughts.
That's right.
But how can your mind have two thoughts?
Oh, your mind has thoughts all the time, no?
No, two thoughts at one. It's fluctuating, alternating between the two.
It's not one thing.
Otherwise, with the rose petal.
Yeah, you can say fluctuating between the two. Alternating so quickly that you can't tell the difference.
So,
what if you say, let's say the thought was fear or jealousy.
Yeah.
Would that be described as mind?
Yeah, you want to know whether it's mind or thought.
Yeah.
It's accepted by everyone as being a thought.
Thought. Okay, so this is the only exception.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's very important. That's why they call it Buddha mind. That's why they call it citta. Citta means mind. Citta means main mind.
This is the only exception to the thought which relies on other thoughts like jealousy.
Slightly different point. This is the only place in Buddhism where an attitude is described as your main mind. As your mind.
And so why?
Not as a thought inside your mind.
Why?
You struggle with it. I mean, Maitreya said so. That's, I mean, in Buddhism we have to show two things. You have to say an authority said it, and it makes sense.
Why does it make sense?
Easy with the authority part, okay?
Once you've achieved...
Maitreya said it, and the Sangha said it, and the Sangha said it in two places.
Maybe we have to call it meditate on it.
No, really, because...
There's apparently some importance to this question. Atisha felt that it was not your mind. Thought it was a thought in your mind. Maitreya didn't say that, and the great commentators didn't say that.
But it had nothing to do with what I said before.
I believe
more like a nature of the mind because it should be there, just ever present as anything.
I've never seen it explained that way. The explanations I've seen are that it's two thoughts. So it has to be a mind that has those two thoughts. To have a one thing which is Buddha mind.
Is it also because once you have it, you don't lose it? Or that it's
no, you can no. lose it.
You can lose it.
Does that have to do with the fact that your nature is pure nature? No, nothing to do with it.
Is it possible that that's the only instance where the mind can simultaneously have two thoughts because of the nature of the thoughts?
No. We didn't say that they could simultaneously have two thoughts. We said it was alternating very quickly between the two. But does that mean that it could dwell for a bit on one of them and then slowly alternate to the other one? Is that considered the same? Or is there a quality to it that it's flickering so quickly between the two that it always seems to be...
I'm not even sure that I should say that it can't have two at the same time. And there's a technical reason for that, and I'm not going to get into it. One is a focus and one is a feeling.
But first, didn't you say the definition of Mahayana bodhicitta is awareness or consciousness, not a mental function?
Right, I did say that.
It's the main mind.
The main mind that has it.
Even though the two mental thoughts don't occur simultaneously.
I don't want to dwell on that.
But that's your reason as to why it's main mind. If they don't occur simultaneously, it's not
right.
Main mind.
But it's not awareness or consciousness.
Right.
And so brain
constantly struggle with it. I mean, it's an important point.
Oh, we are.
Maitreya?
Struggle with us, please.
Maitreya, Asanga, and another commentator, a famous commentator.
We got no problem with people saying it's that way. We're trying to understand why.
No, and apparently it's important. It's very important. And I'm not satisfied with the explanations I've gotten. The best one I've heard, the one that I like the best, is that it, because it has two thoughts, you have to speak in terms of the whole which contains the two.
Well, if you, let's say you forget the two thoughts thing, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say there's one thought. Let's say
there's not.
Wait a minute. Let's say the mind is only holding.
Let's say if it were like anger.
Wait.
Holding one object.
Let's say the mind is holding one object, only the wish to be Buddha.
Right.
Flickering, alternating with slowly or fast,
right,
with the desire to help other people. Okay. The mind is still holding that one thought. Right? So if bodhicitta were a thought and not main mind, it couldn't even hold one thought. You see my point?
Well, then anger would have to be main mind and not a mental function.
Say it again?
Then every other emotion would have to be main mind also.
Well,
No.
Well,
because
the main mind, is holding the one thought.
Okay.
The main mind is holding the anger. Bodhicitta is the main mind, is holding the wish to be Buddha.
Okay. I don't mind. That sounds
I think we've gotten back to the original question I had then, because isn't implied in Buddhahood itself for the sake of others? I mean, there is no Buddha without for the sake of others.
There's
so to achieve Buddhahood for the sake of others is a redundancy, right? Or are there Buddhas out there who have achieved without being for the sake of others?
No, it's saying aspiring to achieve.
For the purpose of...
You could aspire to achieve for some selfish reason. You would never get it, but you could aspire for another reason.
But it would come full circle then. You would be aspiring to something which is for the sake of others. So how could you not aspire to it for the sake of others, since it in of itself...
How could people take robes for selfish reasons? It's stated in the Naya that you do, that you can, that people have.
They
say it's a bad argument.
No. The definite. People can misunderstand what Buddhahood is. That's fine. That's not what I'm talking about.
By definition, they are misunderstanding it.
Right. But are there Buddhas who exist for some reason other than the sake of others?
No.
So then that's a redundancy.
Are there people who aspire to it for other reasons?
But then they don't know what they're aspiring to.
Are there people who aspire to it for other reasons?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, finish.
Not to Buddhahood.
I'm talking
they
about
might
the
think they're aspiring to Buddhahood.
Okay. All right. So it's a main awareness. You struggle with it. I've struggled with it for about 15 years. I'll ask my Lama again. He said, well, it's a difficult question. Adisha actually didn't accept it. Well, and he says, oh, okay, I can see him. Maybe he's wiser than I am. Okay, mental awareness. Why do we have to say mental awareness? Isn't it obviously a mental... Are there any other kinds of awareness? Are there any other kinds of consciousness?
Yeah,
the five sense consciousnesses. There are six awarenesses. There are six consciousnesses. So who on earth is going to mistake bodhicitta for... awareness of good smells in a restaurant, or awareness of sweet sounds in a disco. You know, why isn't it? What did you say? Superfluous. What's the use? Redundant. To say mental awareness. Isn't it obviously a mental awareness? Isn't it obviously a thought and not a sensation of a smell or something like that? Is there anybody who might have a similar consciousness in his ear, or something like that, or his eye? Is that even possible? Why are we bothering saying mental? How they see things is incomprehensible. It's inconceivable. Okay. The Buddha hears everything that was ever eaten in the universe, ever.
It does not.
To all his six senses?
Simultaneously. He hears the warmth of every person touching every other person, whoever did and ever will. Yeah, it's a different kind of being.
Is this only Shakyamuni Buddha?
No, any Buddha.
Oh, any Buddha.
Yeah. So that is meant to exclude that possibility. You know, we're not talking about the ear consciousness of a Buddha, which also fits most of the rest of the definition. Okay. We want to make it mental.
So he hears things that have been said and that will be said.
I said he can smell everything that will ever be said. He can hear everything that will ever be touched.
Never.
Oh, okay, he's different than us. And it's very, very difficult when you're in the monastery, you've been through years of studying how the mind can work, how the senses can work, how senses have to be object specific. And then you get to the 8th chapter of this book and throw it all out the window, you know. Okay.
Again?
What happens to the main mind when it's not occupied with bodhicitta? Does the main mind become something else?
It can have other thoughts. Yeah.
So then bodhicitta is a thought within the main mind?
Now you're getting me into this corner. I accept the viewpoint of Maitreya. The main mind which has the two thoughts. You should be asking me, when I perceive emptiness directly, and I cannot frame a thought, do I lose my bodhicitta for the period of my meditation?
Yeah, in a way.
Still in your
mental
condition. And they say, no, you
I'm can't. I'm sure
Maitreya
says, no, that one's
right. So at that moment, it exists in the mind, and it's not
thought.
It's not present in the mind. It's a big debate.
Well, maybe it's present in the mind in some other form.
Because if you've ever been, when you go through that experience of perceiving emptiness directly, you'll see, you can't even be aware that you're having it. You don't think you're aware that you're having it, but you're not, you don't think Lynn is perceiving emptiness. I'm perceiving emptiness. You can't think that during that deep perception of emptiness. So if you can't think that, how can you have a wish, oh, I wish I could help all sentient beings heal?
Because there's no I.
You can't even perceive yourself at that moment. So do you lose your bodhicitta for that period? And does a bodhisattva, the day after he gets bodhicitta, I mean, when he's eating, when he's in the road, when somebody's about to run over him, a taxi, does he ever think about something else, you know? And does he lose bodhicitta for 10 seconds? And they say, no, it's Simba. It's permeates his mind.
If it's permeating his mind, then it's not his mind.
Right. Difficult.
What is it that permeates his mind?
Bodhicitta.
Bodhicitta.
Which is the mind.
The main
you didn't like the word.
This is a thought.
I didn't like it as an argument. I've never seen it as a justification for why it's main mind. Is what I'm saying. And I don't believe there's any such presentation. In my knowledge. Okay. Focused on achieving total enlightenment. Why do they say total?
For those who really don't understand what enlightenment is.
Well, because there's these two so-called enlightenments, which are not enlightenment.
That doesn't make it any less real. They're all real to the people.
That's why we have to say total enlightenment. There are enlightenments which are not total. And didn't you always wonder about it? You know, I always did. I always said, why did they say purely total enlightenment? I mean, it's enlightenment's enlightenment. I'm enlightened, I'm enlightened.
Well, either
can't
there
be
are
half enlightened.
Either there are enlightenments that are not total, where there's only one enlightenment, and to distinguish it between would-be enlightenments, it's called total. Which is it?
It's the
second one. Yeah. There is only one enlightenment.
It's a beautiful debate. It's an important subject. It comes in this book. It's called Tartuk Tekpa Chukta Drupa. And it means, the big debate is, are there three tracks?
Or is it just the one big track broken into
one
three sections?
One big track. Give me a break. They have to go up to here. They have to go up to here. There's only one track.
They have to. They can't.
They always
can't
will.
Permanently.
They always do.
And why is that? I mean,
you understand. So that's what Tepa Chita Drupa
does. Universally held that they
no.
are.
Different Buddhist schools have different views.
But you can say for a very long time.
But in the end, you must go to Buddha. In the end, you must get bodhicitta. Mahayana bodhicitta.
I understand.
So the Lama says, don't waste your time. Why start with this lower motivation? You might as well go to bodhicitta because you're going to end up there anyway.
I'm not
sure.
Why? Just the two nirvanas
would be
are the same.
The reason
even
you're
though the path to them then he went to
it. There is. I've never seen, or I can't remember any distinction ever made between them. It's a long story. I mean, you could, if you want.
So, yeah. Why don't you more accurately just draw one nirvana with two, with a Y coming out of it? Wouldn't that be much better?
No.
Or are you a little chicken about that?
Okay. Next.
We'll go one more and then we'll have a break. by the way, I repeat, if you weren't learning anything, you know, if it were easy, you wouldn't be learning too much. It's hard. It's hard. I told you in the last class that you're going to get, you get the baby presentation of those three principal paths. And the rest of 5 years is just in more detail on those stuff. And that's what you're getting now.
But I didn't know it was going to be more confusing.
It is confusing. This point is difficult. And I it's difficult for me, and that's why you're confused. And there's no clearer debate on it in the monastery. It's, you've got Atisha against Maitreya. I mean, who are we?
The point itself is difficult enough. Getting difficult. To it is even...
difficult. It's difficult. They are both enlightened beings. They probably wanted us to really come up with some realization about it.
Is this even a significant...
As she said, it's kind of...
Is this even a significant point, or are we just debating...
Don't think it's not.
Oh, please.
Don't think it's not. The exercise of debating seemingly insignificant points is what makes your knowledge of the significant points firm.
It's a practice.
And it's the fact that you're arguing these insignificant points rather than watching TV. You see... Spending time this way is keeping you close to the Dharma. And that's one function of debating things that, okay, I mean, you're never going to sit there in your next retreat and worry, oh my God, is this love for other people my main
which the three bodhicittas?
But if you study the three bodhicittas, the three enlightenments, it means you're going to be forced to ask the question that they've asked, what's the difference between these nirvanas? And I'm going to say, it's a difference in what they think emptiness is. And the study of what, the study of the wrong ideas of emptiness is the best way to perceive emptiness. And in fact, the first Panchen Lama became the first Panchen Lama because he was a master at that. He wrote a whole book about it.
What emptiness isn't.
What emptiness isn't. And he's got a beautiful book, and someone should translate it someday. There's a devil over here, and there's an angel over here. And the devil says, oh, emptiness is nothingness. Yeah, satori. You know, just blank, you know. And then the angel says, No, I mean, anyone can see that. You know, when you get knocked on the head, you see that. You know, that's not what emptiness is. And then the devil says, you're right. Oh, emptiness is, you know, and it's a long book. We studied it for like a year. And it gets more fine. And at the end, you swear to God the devil is right. Because it sounds so good. It sounds like what you heard in all the Dharma lectures you went through, you know. And then the angel says, no, not quite. You know, there's a little bit of problem here. And the devil also, not only ego grasping, but he's describing egotism also. He says, come on, taking care of yourself. I'm the one who took care of you all these years. You know, worrying about John is really the best. I mean, if you don't worry about him, who's going to worry about you? There's this Hebrew expression that you can teach me. You know, if you don't worry about yourself, who's going to worry about yourself? It's actually not the full expression.
It's not now when.
Yeah. No, and then the full expression is, well, God, give me the strength not to worry about myself. There's more to that saying. But people only quote the first half.
It's like America, right or wrong. That's as far as they go. The rest of it, when it's wrong, I correct it.
Okay, so anyway, it doesn't hurt. What will happen is you'll forget all these details. But because you debated the details, you'll always remember the main 2 points.
And furthermore, you can't get to Buddhahood without getting through this anyway, sooner or later, right?
Yeah.
And Maitreya and Asanga would not have referred to it otherwise.
Well, they spend time debating it, so it must be important. Okay.
I mean, we can't just skip over this understanding and jump
right
over
that. Okay, so total enlightenment. How about for the benefit of others? Why is that necessary?
It still seems to me that all of these are caveats.
Kali, what you're saying is that no one aspires to enlightenment not for the purpose of others?
No, I think I wrote down maybe an easier way to say it. The wish for total enlightenment with the correct understanding of what that total enlightenment entails.
You cannot perceive correctly what total enlightenment is until you reach it, period. And that's a debate we have.
Right, but it seems
so
that...
So according to you, you can't have... Bodhicitta until you become
No. The point,
seriously.
The point is that of all the multitudinal dimensions of enlightenment, apparently for beings like us, the most important one, or one of the most important ones to keep in mind, is the quality of it that it is for the benefit of all beings, because it's present in the aspiration, and it's also present in the result.
Okay, which leads me to a little side point. Why are we studying bodhicitta, and why do we study refuge? What is the order of this book? Who's deciding the order of this book?
Is that the three paths?
What's order? I haven't told you about the structure of the ornament, and I'm not going to. But I'll tell you briefly. We are discussing the qualities which typify a Buddha. There are 10, and that's why we got into refuge, and that's why we're into bodhicitta now. It's all with reference to a fully enlightened being. These
that's
are
not the same as the qualities that are like uncaused, spontaneous.
No, no. These are 10 qualities that are typical of Buddhas, and that's how the Prajnaparamitas start their discussion of refuge, and how they discuss their start their discussion of Buddha. That's why we're talking about these subjects in this order. Just so you know, okay, these are relate to the 10 qualities of the Buddha. So, for the benefit of others, why do we have to put that in definition? Why is that necessary?
I would think it's to keep people's eye on the ball.
It's very simple, much simple.
That's a Maya.
It's to block these other two kinds of wish for enlightenment. These are wishes for enlightenment, but they're for lower enlightenment. They're not for full enlightenment. Well, we have to say it because there are two other kinds of wishes for enlightenment that are selfish.
I thought just a little earlier we said real enlightenment is Buddhahood, and these other things are would-be enlightenments.
No, they're enlightenment. They're one of the three enlightenments. What are you talking about?
And dead,
they're enlightenments. Three enlightenments.
Yeah, I know, but huh? Problems with the word enlightenment.
What hat you got on?
Huh?
What hat are you wearing?
I'm wearing, well...
No, when you're in the Satyendrika, you got to be a Satyendrika. You can't fool around. We believe in three enlightenments. And Mahayana, you have to define Mahayana bodhicitta this way to block those two wrong wishes for enlightenment. Period. Don't get mixed up with
process. Well, wait a minute, though. The
mixed up
so
a lot
the
of
Tantricas weird. Wouldn't have this up there, would they?
Sure they would.
That's their definition.
That's their presentation.
Are these definitions Svatantrika
definitions? Sure. We are Svatantrika for the next
week. We are now Svatantrika. Yeah. Thank you. Is that from the beginning of this class?
Lower Madhyamika school.
This is from the beginning of this class.
Svatantrika doesn't mean... according to me, but it's not correct.
The Prasangika is still accepted.
The bottom line is we say the three because we're wrong, but we don't know
it.
By the way, Kylie, that is a separate subject. It's called Tanya. Why did the Buddha ever teach in it? This is all Buddha speech. Buddha talking.
The highest enlightenment
is I think we'll take a break. Okay, so then we'll talk about the
other.
Take a short break, okay? Come back in 10 minutes. Is equivalent to when the Buddha said, kill your father, kill your mother. It's not true. You have to interpret it.
Can I clarify before the first thing you said was the definition of Mahayana bodhicitta is it is the awareness or consciousness, not a mental function. And mental function is like the feelings, the thoughts, right? It's main mind.
That's correct.
Then you said to me, is bodhicitta the thought? So are you differentiating between bodhicitta
no.
and Mahayana?
No, that's not the point.
Okay, you're still saying Mahayana
bodhicitta.
Bodhicitta
is the main mind. That has the thoughts. You have to say it that way. You have to write it that way. Bodhicitta is the main mind that has those two thoughts.
But then before you said, but is it the main mind that has the two thoughts, or is it the thoughts? And when I said the thoughts, you said, yes, that's right.
No, that's not
the main mind and the thoughts.
The main mind that has the two thoughts.
Is the main?
That possesses the two thoughts.
It has to be a main mind to contain the two thoughts, otherwise it couldn't exist in the mind.
That's
the
best
thoughts.
Argument I've ever heard.
Say it again.
If it weren't the main mind, it couldn't hold a thought. So when you had a thought, you would lose your bodhicitta if the bodhicitta wasn't the main mind.
Actually, Michael, when I think of it in terms of Buddhahood, it sort of continues.
Okay, yes, thank you.
It's a shorthand.
See what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Last week's or this week's?
Please don't write anything.
What?
This week.
Right.
Yeah, can you pass those out? I just want you to listen.
Okay.
If you write it, then
I need a copy of it.
Okay, just listen, and we'll finish on time. You can finish on time. The first question is, give the whole definition, which is on page 2. You're just going to write it out. Yeah, I'll tell you why. You don't have to memorize it. I just want you to go through your exercise of writing it out, because the next questions are going to be, you're going to have to be looking at definitions to answer the rest of the question. And question number 2. What thing is not this wish for enlightenment, but might be confused with this wish for enlightenment if we left the word main out of the definition? Like, if I didn't say main mind, if I just said it's the thought that you'd like to have enlightenment, what might be the confusion?
Between
Mahayana.
The mind
that
has the thoughts and the thoughts.
Between Mahayana and Bodhicitta.
Why does Maitreya have to put mind in the definition? Main. Why does
because
he have to
put
main?
Because there were two types, right? Because there's two thoughts and two thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that people might confuse is that one of those thoughts is itself Bodhicitta. That's why he has to say the mind which holds those two thoughts. That's why he has to say main. Why did he put main in there? He's trying to prevent you from thinking it's only one or two of those thoughts. It's both of the thoughts together. You can't have two thoughts together. So it's the mind that's holding those two thoughts together. So the word main is meant to prevent someone from thinking that bodhicitta is a wish.
You really don't want us to write anything?
Well, I think it is.
Everyone else.
I don't mind. Go ahead, write.
Could you repeat
make yourself notes. Don't get distracted, because otherwise we won't
say. Could you repeat yourself?
Yeah. The reason we put the word main in the definition is that we don't want people to think that just one of those thoughts could be bodhicitta. It's not. It's both of the thoughts together. It's the mind that's holding both of the thoughts together. That's why we have to say main mind. What translation do I use for bodhicitta? What was it in that book?
Which book?
The Tsongkhapa book.
Oh, you use the simple one.
The wish for enlightenment. Okay. Is bodhicitta a wish? A wish?
Two wishes.
It's two wishes. You can't call some thing, two things, so we call it the main mind that has those two wishes, and that's why we have the same mind. It's really two wishes.
It's the cohesion of those two wishes.
Which is impossible, so you have to say it's the mind that has those two wishes. It's the mind that has those two wishes.
Cohesion means something that connects two things.
I understand. Okay, number 3. What thing is not this wish, but might be confused with it if we left out the word mental awareness? Is there any such thing as any other kind of awareness?
Yeah, the Buddha.
Yeah, the Buddha's sensory consciousness.
Can you repeat the question?
What thing is not this wish for enlightenment, it's not bodhicitta, but might be confused with it if we didn't say the word mental in the definition? Mm-hmm.
Like
mental awareness.
Before you said you hear with your
toe.
Hear,
the Buddha hears with his toe.
Right. So you can interchange. There's no hear and feel
Right.
Okay.
No, the Buddha.
But it's not going to be the same sense.
Yeah, the Buddha hears everything in the universe that ever happened and ever will happen with his toe.
Could he feel also with his, eyes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It feels warm with his eyes.
So it's not the Buddha's sensory consciousness.
Right. That's why you have to say mental. And this is the way I want to handle these definitions, because if you understand why each word is there, then you understand the definition. And in fact, that's pretty much what we spend all our time doing the most. Okay. Why is it called mental awareness? Because we want to say it's not those Buddha's sense. Does the Buddha's sense awareness have bodhicitta?
Yes.
It has love, right? It has that ultimate mind. It's not bodhicitta. It's not mental. Okay. And that's why we didn't. That's why we have to put in the word mental. That's why we have to put in the word mental.
The Buddha can't have bodhicitta with his mouth.
Apparently not.
He could be aware of nice feelings, but not
He can know all things. Would that be so obvious?
So,
Bodhisattva
can only be achieved through a method?
No, I think we could have a good debate about that. I mean, I'll ask my lama, I'll debate it.
Imagine, what is the method?
I'll say, if the nose of the Buddha can perceive emptiness, which it can, the Buddha can perceive emptiness by smelling. Then why can't we have Bodhisattva?
Michael, could you say that again?
All right, the Buddha does have
He's already there.
Well, if you didn't have Bodhisattva, it wouldn't be mine.
Why is it could you say one more time? Just say the sentence.
The reason why we say mental awareness is that we don't want people to think that the sensory awareness of the Buddha, which is extraordinary, could be Bodhisattva.
Which could be anything else but.
Looks like that.
Okay. And why don't you want the sensory awareness of the Buddha?
Question number three.
Okay. The next question. What would happen? What thing is not this wish but might be confused with it if we left out the words belonging to the greater one? And I didn't tell you that yet. Okay. In here it says, why do we have to say here it is the main mental awareness that belongs to the greater one? Is there any love of this power, this looking to Buddhahood for the sake of all other beings, that's not Bodhisattva? That's not Mahayana Bodhisattva? Is there anything focused to this for all sentient beings that's not Mahayana? There is. There is. I have to teach you something.
What?
There's a little place right...
just before that which produces Mahayana,
yep.
Which is really Mahayana in this sort of a prenatal state.
Right? It's called
sugar.
Oh
no! Oh yeah.
The sugar cane bodhicitta.
Yes.
So finally, we have
the comes and goes.
Sāsī bhūrhi jūṣīṁ netāśāṁ virāvīṁ śrīnyam dekhyam pādhi Sāṅgye śindhu mitte bhuvāhi
This is the end of Class 3.